Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of our late, great Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly, which still carries his moniker, although he parted this veil of tears over 2 years ago. We try to preserve Brian's roundtable format by adhering to his concept that less is more, more or less. Today, we have Gail Kellner, Kevin Jones, and me, Bruce Holman, zooming in from our Vachon homes, and Lynn Kerrigan and Truman O'Brien in the Voice of Vachon Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling, bodacious downtown Vachon. Let me introduce and hear what's going on in the world of each of the Brieflys. Our master of the virtual mix and Zoom modulating sound engineer, treetop skimming pilot, Vachon rancher out of West Texas and Montana, Truman O'Brien. What's up in your world, Truman?
Boy, I don't know. I think there ought to be a drum roll.
No kidding. We could make that happen.
A cymbal crash or something. I don't know. That was pretty exciting. I've got a lot to live up to here. This week has been kind of cool. A couple of things. I think you may have saw on Facebook, I got my nephew, who is a partner in our airplane and learning to fly, got him back in the air. He took a hiatus there, first because I crashed the training airplane. That was the start of it. And then, of course, COVID and his work schedule and our redoing the upgrades that we're doing on our other airplane. So anyway, it had been almost a year since he had flown, and it was really great getting him back in the air. And the guy is a natural. He could have been by himself. The guy just did a great job flying. And then are you ready for this? I went to dinner. I went to a movie last night. Whoa.
You got out.
I got out. Is that amazing? Amazing. And I have to recommend, if you haven't seen Death on the Nile, I recommend it.
Oh, great.
It's a fun movie. Really fun movie. But anyway, that's what I've been up to.
Well, sounds exciting, Truman.
Yeah.
We're getting near the end.
Yeah,
I hope. That's right, yeah. Out of the land of magnolias and onto the island of Bedrones comes the analytic academic, social worker, poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie debutantes, Lynn Kerrigan. Lynn, what's rocking your world today?
Hey, good morning, everyone in Vachon. I am entranced by the beginnings of spring here, or as we talked about a couple of sessions ago, in bulk, the, quote, false spring that we get because of the sun and the warmer temperatures for about a week early in February. That's halfway between the winter solstice and the summer equinox, so it's a glorious time, and I've been finally out raking a bunch of leaves left over from all those storms and following the progress of my daughter, who had a terrible ski accident up on Crystal and is going to be facing some surgery in her knee, and baking. I ventured into baking a recipe from the New York Times magazine a couple of weeks ago, the French Tigre cake, which was delicious. I recommend it. And playing some music with my old-time buddies. Getting the feel of normalcy again is really pretty wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks, Lynn.
Yeah.
Reflecting on his years as a rocket scientist from his perch on the north end of the island as the phantom editor of Invisible Vachon's weekly online newsletter for your consideration, Kevin Jones. Kevin, what is the next big thing on Invisible Vachon's calendar?
What's coming up? You know, I almost didn't notice myself in that description. the next big thing is tomorrow evening, February 16th at 7 p.m., where Invisible Vachon has its second meeting of the year. And Bruce, graced our meeting in January. And in February, we're going to have Islander Lennon Bronsema, who works with the Washington Conservation Voters. And what that means is they work to elect environmental champions to our state legislature. And he will be joined by Joyce Stanford, a Black woman who ran for office in the 26th Legislative District, which is between Gig Harbor and Port Orchard. Joy has been to Vashon, and she will be joining us on Zoom to talk about her role as the new political director, doing the same type of work that Lennon's doing. So we'll have a great duo from Washington Conservation Voters to let us know how to elect people who will really serve our environmental and climate values. So I hope you can join us. To find out where to register, you'll need to go out to indivisiblevashon.org. Right at the top of the homepage, there will be a click to register for the meeting. So we hope to see you there.
Great. Thanks, Kevin. Ensconced in her family's multi-generational cabin at Sylvan Beach is futurist, writer, dreamcatcher, recently published author, and as Brian described her, peripatetic poet, Gail Kellner. Gail, do you have some soothing words for us during these troubled times?
Good morning. Good morning. You know, I guess I do. Last week, I don't know if you all recall, we had a couple of very windy days. And on one of them, on February 11th, I jotted down this poem that morning and simply called A Stormy Day. And this is, I don't know, my video doesn't seem to be working this morning, but I am here. So, anyway, if you can see it, it's just still on the scrap of paper. Not much has been done with it, but I'll read it to you. It's called A Stormy Day. I wonder what will blow my way, the content of each day, a gift from which we cannot lift the veil of time until it reveals the moment captured, then concealed. Never to return again, so count your blessings along the way on yet another stormy day. I wonder what will blow my way.
I like it. Nice. I like it.
Very nice.
I like your internal rhymes, Gail. That sounded great.
Great.
Yeah. So I too, like Lynn, you know, the first daffodil I saw up a week or so ago in front of the pharmacy, my forsythia, which is has a bright yellow bloom and a large bush is starting to pop. All through the yard, you know, the grass is growing and things are turning green, and that just gives me a great amount of joy. So thank you for asking. I'm doing well.
I have a quick question for you gardener type folks, and that is, my yard is full of crocuses this year.
Yes, mine too.
And you know, I've lived at my place for over 30 years, and we always had a few. But boy, this year they are prolific. Is there something going on that I missed? Or
yes, they know we need it.
I guess.
They know we need to see them.
Boy, I mean, they yes, are.
I'd say little elves at night. The bulbs do reproduce and, you know, spread over time. So maybe just the conditions have been right. They may have liked all the wet weather over the winter.
Oh, boy, I don't know, but it's amazing. Wow. Yeah. All right, that was my question.
And beautiful too, right?
Oh, they are lovely. Yes, thanks. Well, what's going on with you, Bruce?
Well, I'm Bruce Hallman. I'm hosting today's show, trying to keep some order in the midst of all the chaos we're living through right now. As a historian, I try to provide a long-range view and continually remind all of us that while the grinding wheels of justice may take time, they eventually get the bastards in the end. So I'm a believer in the grinding wheels of justice.
There you go.
So let's check in on this weekend. This was a big weekend, you know, Super Bowl, Valentine's Day, Trump's accountants abandoning him. So how did you guys, what was the Super Bowl for all of you for the Brieflies?
Well, for me, it was a quiet
Super Bowl.
For me, it was, I had the beach completely to myself.
One of the advantages. Yeah. My wife Pam used to go shopping every Super Bowl weekend because she knew nobody else would be in the stores.
That's right.
Well, I was impressed with the game. I mean, usually, you know, very often the Super Bowls are real ho-hum, you know. But this one was really an exciting game. I mean, it was well played. Some great, great plays made, and just was exciting. You know, I mean, it was a real, real change.
I like the ending. I thought that was a really pretty spectacular twist of an ending. And yeah. I managed to miss the whole halftime show because I took myself out to rake Evermore leaves during that long hip-hop halftime. So I don't know how that went. I'm curious.
It was pretty spectacular.
Well, I was loading the dishwasher, so I didn't really watch it either. But and I had the sound muted, so I wasn't all that impressed.
A bunch of old white people ignoring.
Yeah, exactly.
Kevin, what's up with you?
Well, I'd have to say that an acquaintance of mine said it's the bet for the game is the 3.5-point spread on the final score. It's not who's going to win. It's not who's going to lose. It's not going to be who gets how many points. It's the point spread. And as I'm watching the game, I myself do not wager money on sporting events. And I hope to actually stay and true to that spirit. However, as I'm watching the game and that last touchdown is looming, I'm thinking that's going to get him within the 3.5-point spread. So I was living vicariously through his wager. And I frankly find that just as uplifting as if I'd had my own money on it.
So, there you go.
Very good. So yesterday was Valentine's Day. Any special Valentine's events, wishes, reminiscences?
Well, I told you mine already. Dinner and a movie. Woohoo!
It's about as exciting as it gets.
Boy, you're not kidding.
Well, I live alone, so I made my own Valentine cake last night, and then I delivered a batch of it to some real good friends of mine that have been taking care of me a lot, you know, in these last troubled times, and I appreciate that. So Valentines are not our just momentous loves. They're our friends and our family and whoever take the time to be with us and be part of our tribe. So I want to send out good wishes to everybody to whom I did not bring cake.
Great.
Like us.
Like you.
That's right. Yeah. Kevin, Gail, any special Valentines?
Yeah, I took the opportunity to make dinner, and that's always appreciated, which means that I can actually cook if pressed.
Yeah.
But it was always, yesterday was a sort of a busier day than I expected. It wasn't busy with the things that are normally busy days, because people do tend to kind of kick back for Valentine's Day. So I actually did a fair amount of catching up on things that I'm behind on. So it was a good day for spending time with Susie, and a good day for actually getting a little bit ahead of the curve on my obligations.
And Gail?
No, it was just a regular day for me, work and getting things done. How about you, Bruce?
Oh, Valentine's Day is one of my grandson's birthdays.
Oh.
He's a Valentine baby, so we celebrated his birthday over the weekend and yesterday, and he was 8 years old. So I thought it would be interesting to reflect back on what was happening when I was 8 years old. Hmm. So in my case, that was 1955. So the salt polio vaccine had been approved, so we were all lining up in school to get our polio vaccines, either by shots or by little sugar cubes. That was the year Rosa Parks was arrested for refusing to sit in the back of the bus in Montgomery, and began the Montgomery bus boycott and led to the civil rights movement, which had been in progress for, you know, almost 100 years before that. But, you know, essentially really kicked off the career of Martin Luther King and the modern civil rights movement. It's also the year Gunsmoke debuted, the TV show.
Yeah.
So if you're of a certain age, you remember Miss Kitty, Amanda Blake. I mean, one of the leads was the owner of a saloon and a woman of questionable sort of character, opposite Marshall Dillon, James Arness. So Gunsmoke debuted, and also that year Disneyland opened, and the Mickey Mouse Club debuted on ABC TV. So 1955, pretty spectacular year for an eight-year-old.
Yeah.
So for the rest of the Briefleys, what was happening when you were 8 years old? Yeah, Kevin.
Well, I'll have to say, Bruce, we know that, you know, for Gail, that's going to be 1995. And for Lynn, it's going to be 1990. Yeah. But for me, I was eight in 1964. And that was the time of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was sort of the escalation of the United States in the war with Vietnam. So I was happy to have lived that past that day, and also for the war to have ended right as I was graduating from high school, which means that I could take my service card and put it out into the garbage can and not have to worry about being drafted. So that was a big event in my life, of course. So that's probably the biggest one, but also the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And given the fact that we're still in Black History Month, I think that's particularly prescient. And thank goodness for Lyndon Johnson, who's a president who we probably never really would have expected to move in that direction. But thank goodness that he did. So mm-hmm. Things to be thankful for.
Great. Yeah, Truman.
Well, I'm a little older than you, actually, Bruce. I hate to admit, but I am. And I was still in West Texas when I was eight. And learning to drive a tractor, which was a big deal, and actually, it's probably the awakening of my love of aviation, because I think I mentioned this before, but in 1954, the Enola Gay made its final flight from Paiute Air Base, which is only 5 miles from our farm, and flew over our house and ended up in Washington D.C. At the museum there. But I have to tell you about Gunsmoke. You reminded me that when I was in the Army, I was in Germany, and we used to watch German television occasionally, and they would play Gunsmoke, and Matt Dillon would throw open the, you know, the swinging doors of the saloon and go, "Was ist los in das Gasthaus, Miss Kitty?" You know, and we all used to just roar laughing, you know, because hearing Matt Dillon, you know, speak German was always interesting. Anyway.
I always liked Miss Kitty. I always thought she was a Blake. Complex character, yeah. And noticed very early on that Marsha Dillon liked to talk to her about how tough things were.
Yep.
Very little to anybody else about the backstories.
Yeah.
And I decided I liked Miss Kitty. Her rough ways just fit me a lot. And actually, the only thing I remember about being eight, other than the sugar cube polio tab, I liked it being on a sugar cube, standing in long lines. I remember that. But the only other thing I remember is actually hauling off and smacking somebody on the playground that said something mean to me before I realized she was about a foot and a half taller and a grade or two older. And I got pummeled. And I thought, what do you think you were doing there? Even you are not that stupid. Don't do that again.
And I hate to tell you, Lynn, but you haven't changed a bit.
I know.
you're still tilting those windmills. Come on.
It's true. Tragic, but true.
Well, in 1968, I was eight in 1968, and that's the year I opened my first bakery along with my sisters. It was on the stairs down to the beach. We featured pies made of sand and was very popular amongst the other neighbors. My memories of 1968 are all childhood memories, really, with perhaps one sort of exception, which was in the schoolyard. I would remember the high school kids started walking through, and they were wearing bell bottoms, and they were dressed in what we would now call the sort of hippie fashion, and you know, arms strung around each other. And I remember there were confrontations with the school personnel at times because I didn't want them, you know, touching each other in the grades, in the yard where there were children watching.
No.
You know, they were just doing nothing. At least I saw nothing more than an arm draped over a shoulder. But that was one of my memories. And on television, there were things like, you know, the Brady Bunch, and, you know, my sisters and I were arguing over whether Davey of the Monkees, you know, the group, the singing group, boy band, whether he was who he was looking at when we would prop up the album against the wall, and then argue over who he was looking at. Clearly, he was looking at me.
The wonderful world of 8 year olds.
Yes, exactly.
Very different world than we live in. Thank goodness.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, today is National Gum Drop Day. So, you know, going back to Kevin's sort of what day, national day is it? Gumdrop Day. Whoever knew there was a gumdrop day? So my question to the Brieflies is which is your favorite gumdrop? And what does it say about you?
Licorice. And I think that says it all.
You're sweet, huh?
No.
Oh, funny. Well, mine is always orange. Those darn orange gumdrops. I hone in on them like a bee.
Yeah, Gail, you and I both orange, and I love those. If you remember those little
orange-shaped ones,
strips, sort of orange slice kind of
things. Yeah. Orange slice things. Slices.
Yeah, they were shaped like little segments of an orange. Yeah. But of course, they were made of. I'm sure. No, I don't know. I can't even imagine what number color dye is in those things.
Right.
And don't the sugar know. Content. Oh, but boy, I still treat myself to one if I come across it. Yeah.
But you could always put them in your mouth, you know, clamp your teeth. And then smile and you had orange teeth. So.
Yeah. That's right. And then really get
them. You are a bunch of 8 year olds.
Yeah. Wait, Bruce. What does it say about you that you love those oranges?
I'm a sugar addict.
Yeah, that's funny. I am too. That's it.
Well, I have a new gumdrop favorite. I'm afraid I have to tell you about a couple of my buddies back in Montana. They just recently legalized marijuana in Montana. I mean, just the first of the year, I believe. And a couple of my buddies are saying, you know, I've been having trouble sleeping in bed. And, you know, I went and I tried one of these gumdrops from, or the little gummy bears or whatever, you know, from the pot shop. And, boy, they are great. So I thought, I might have to try that. And so I did. And the young woman at the place said, if you don't use marijuana a lot, you should probably start with a half. She got that right. It works. It puts you right out. And actually, you feel pretty good in the morning. You're a little groggy at first, but not bad. Not bad.
And so, he thought, darn, I could have been sleeping all these years.
Yeah, all these years. I'm just getting stoned before I go to bed. You know, no, not you really don't. It just really makes you sleep.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
Yep. All right. And you wake up hungry.
Yeah, exactly. Get the munchies when you wake up. Yeah.
At least, you know, I think that would be the case for me.
There you go.
So, Lynn, licorice, Kevin, any favorite gumdrops?
You know, I always think nothing stands out in my mind, but I always kind of remember going for the glow in the dark color gumdrops. And I probably did, like Gail was saying, I probably risked my health and who knows what might happen to me is in the next decade or so. I remember the usually like a winter mint, peppermint, you know, just like a really refreshing taste and, you know, sort of clear the sinus passages as well. So yeah, it's all good.
So, you know, Kevin, you are glowing.
Let me turn off the lights and see if you can see where I'm.
That's right.
How many fingers am I holding up now?
Yeah.
Three green ones.
You didn't see the blue one?
Yeah.
Oh, moving along into more serious kinds of things. So let's talk about Vashon news. A number of historians of pandemics have been sort of commenting lately that pandemics are over when people decide that they're over. I mean, it's really when people get tired enough of whatever a pandemic sort of brings, whether it be the Black Plague or the Spanish flu or whatever. Has Vashon decided that the pandemic is over?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go to the anywhere, grocery store, pharmacy, whatever, everybody's still masked up. And if you're walking down the street without your mask on, people kind of look at you funny still, you know. I don't know. I don't think so.
I agree with you. I think Vashon has really embraced the safety protocols of the pandemic. And I think what's happening all over is that people are just sick of trying to be compliant and do good and resist all their fun impulses to go out and do things, you know, with other people. And that's breaking down. I talk about social disorder. You know, you see it in a crisis like this. And I think people's resistance is really suffered, and their ability to kind of keep going during this epidemic has been really challenged. And I'm not ready to give up. I don't want to give up. I'll stay masked indoors for a long time.
You know, one thing that struck me and that hit me several times is the lack of Kohl's the last 2 years, or, you know, I mean, because everyone's masking up, no one's getting colds. I mean, I haven't had a cold in a couple of years, you know. Yeah. And occasionally,
well, I think that
go ahead.
I have a fair bit of contact with the younger demographic on the island, in part because I have, you know, two sons and their partners, wife and my daughter-in-law and my daughter-in-love, as I call them. And so I see quite a bit of that late 20s, early 30s population, and I think they are over it. Mm. I think, you know, for them, their gatherings are very often, you know, if you feel unsafe, you know, we totally respect that. Or if you want to wear a mask, you're welcome to. But they often, I believe, gather without masks now. And I think that there's a certain... you know, inevitability that you're going to get the virus, and it's not going to, you know, be terribly harmful to you if you're a younger person. And I think that I've also witnessed that a bit in the stores. I don't know if any of you have noticed that, where the mask is drooping down off the nose.
Oh yeah.
Well, a little bit of that, yeah.
In the you know, particularly like in the hardware stores, particularly among the younger men and that I've seen. So I don't know. I think we are moving out of it. I think we're just about done. I think once spring hits and people are really able to be outside significantly more, I think we'll really see that accelerate.
And I think once the state drops the mask mandate, and then I think that's coming any moment now. So that will probably help.
I was so surprised to see even Canada join in the insurrection with that big caravan in Ottawa blocking the streets. When the Canadians have protests that block streets, you know we're all in trouble.
That brings me to that's an interesting point. You know, are those kinds of protests, are they legitimate political discourse? You know, and what does that mean today? And what is the role of civil disobedience in a sort of post-pandemic culture? What do the Brieflies think about the blockades in Canada and the proposed, it's coming in 2 weeks apparently, the Freedom Convoy that's going to work its way from LA to Washington, D.C. in the United States? What do we see happening here?
Boy, it sure gets attention. You know, that's one thing that I think about. And I know these people feel that they're not being heard by scientists or by politicians, and they're tired of it and they want that attention. They certainly get that. Whether or not it is effective, I don't know.
Yeah, Kevin.
You know, you asked the question, Bruce, what is, you know, what is legitimate political discourse? And, I think that's a really hard question to answer. In my mind, at the moment, I'm thinking it kind of goes to intent and objective. So, you know, if your intent is to stop a constitutional process of the country in which you live, I don't see that as legitimate political discourse. If your intent is to work through, you know, to influence the system in a way that achieves a change in how things are done in the country that you're in, then I think that constitutes legitimate political discourse. But, you know, there's clearly a fine line there, and I think it's hard to know where to draw that line.
Well, Well, part of the issue with that fine line for me is it against the law? I mean, you're blocking a main thoroughfare that's, you know, that's critical to commerce and to every person's livelihood there. Is that legitimate or not? I don't think it is. I think if you're, you know, I'm not a big fan of protest unless you go through the process. You know, if you want to get a parade license or whatever and you know, march all you want, but to block traffic and to disrupt the society, I don't agree with it. I think that's not legitimate. So, but that's my personal opinion.
You know, they might say different. They might say that it's for a higher law or a higher order question than, you know, the daily commerce that we do. I'm not saying that I particularly agree with it. What I'm saying that when I was younger, I was in the streets about everything. I thought that the political movements of our time were the only way of getting major attention and that we didn't have 20 years to move things through the system. And sometimes I feel like that now. I get it.
Of course, I was in Vietnam when all of the Vietnam protests were
there
going on. So I have a very, very different view of protest, of a very different opinion, but from my history, of course.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that's another really good question, Truman, is the law where the line is? And I would admire living in the country that where that is a valid assumption, right? But there are countries, and this country is now moving to institute laws that seem not very reasonable, like a law that's, I'll just go by one example, I think is in Georgia, illegal to give water to somebody standing in a line.
Ridiculous.
So, you know, it in the situation where you have confidence that the laws of the country are passed in good faith, then I think absolutely. I think that your your algorithm is the right one. But, you know, there's lots of countries that we can look at and say, boy, I don't know if those laws, you know, those laws were expressly passed to suppress the voice of individuals.
You look at the Arab Spring.
You
look at the Arab Spring, you know, that whole movement.
Yeah, well, but I certainly think, you know, the notion of loss of life and property damage and things like that, right? That's certainly a line that I think is regardless of where the laws stand. And sorry, Gail, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I didn't mean to talk over you either, Kevin. I was just going to say what I object about these freedom convoys or freedom rallies, as they call them, is the bullying aspect of them, you know. And I have more of a feeling that it's less about any specific disagreement other than a lot of frustration about a long pandemic, you know, having to be masked, having to be isolated. You know, in Canada, I was listening to an interesting thing about how, you know, Canadians, they have had many more restrictions even than we have had in the United States. They've also had a much lower death rate. Mm-hmm. And about 85% of Canadians are vaccinated. But I think there is a frustration going on over now 2 years of being shut down, you know, if not, you know, they've had very, very little opportunity to do the things that make us feel normal, most of us feel normal in a society, to associate, to gather, you know, whether it's with friends, family, just normal things. And I think some of it is just plain frustration. They just want it to be over and they're just done.
Yeah.
Along with plenty of misinformation and this kind of, you know, radical right-wing patriotic libertarianism that seems to be rising right now.
Yeah, of course, no. You have to play the devil's advocate here and say, well, is that because you disagree with their stance or because you disagree with what they're doing? You know, but I don't know. I have a problem with all of it personally.
All good questions, though.
Yeah.
We should be asking these questions.
I agree.
Right, and it really goes back to that concept developed articulated by Gandhi and by Martin Luther King of civil disobedience, and at what point does breaking the law is breaking the law justified in terms of getting the law reassessed and changed,
right.
And you know always You know, if you're a progressive, you know, progressive protests to change laws seem legitimate, whereas, you know, more conservative or more right-wing protests don't seem as legitimate. But it also takes us back to what Kevin was talking about. Where is that line in which, you know, civil disobedience and protest moves into insurrection and a challenge to authority?
Yeah, I'd like to think that the law is where the line is, but here's just another data point to say that that maybe isn't where the line should be. there's an acquaintance of mine who is, I believe, in a family of long-term environmental activists. And it was revealed a year or so ago that, yeah, he finally got arrested, and, you know, his brothers and sisters have been arrested already, and, you know, he was sort of a slacker, you know, because he wasn't really out there, you know, pushing the envelope. And the idea that you see legislators and congresspeople, you know, being arrested, and that makes the news. So that brings attention to the issue. So it's almost like where the law is the line that you're motivated to cross in order to get the attention, right, that you want to bring to the issue. So it's a tricky situation.
You know, I think maybe you hit on it earlier, Kevin, that for me, if there's destruction of property or if there's, you know, defacing or that violence, that is beyond the pale. And you can talk about civil disobedience all you want, but once you get to that point, you've crossed the line. So the whole storming the Capitol, you know, that's right there. You're breaking windows, you're breaking in. That's crossing the line. And my friend Craig sent a note saying, hey, how about the Fugitive Slave Act? You know, where you were arrested if you tried to help slaves, you know, escape. So right. That's a good point. You know. Is it a just law, I think is what you were saying, Kevin.
Yeah, and that's sort of the point that Martin Luther King and Gandhi were making. You know, I mean, civil disobedience, but also in a philosophy of nonviolence.
Right, right.
And when you put those together, you have a very powerful political movement, potentially.
I agree.
Gail and Kevin?
Go ahead, Kevin.
Okay, I was thinking back... you know, you mentioned earlier is the pandemic over on Vashon, and I was in the Backbone warehouse, and I saw the banner, which for a long time stood at the north end of the island, saying, you know, our demographic is, you know, we're elderly generally on Vashon, so, you know, mask up. And that banner is now in the warehouse at Backbone. So the thing that also prompts me about Backbone is this idea of, you know, destruction of property when you want to get people's attention. And there's a beauty in that light projection is something that is now a thing. And it's, you know, you don't need the spray can and to do the graffiti on the wall, right? You just do the light projection at night, and all of a sudden you get your message out and no property's damaged. So maybe we're seeing a more ecologically sensitive approach to protests.
I would hope.
Yeah, Lynn.
I think a little bit about the amount of change that we have had to absorb recently, you know, in the last, I don't know, 50 years since certainly the tech information world hit. And I guess what I'm meaning is that there's only so much that the human mind can wrap itself around and adapt to before it digs in its heels and needs to kind of protect and preserve whatever traditions or whatever the way things were happen. And I know that our country was sort of born out of civil disobedience, you know, throwing that tea into the harbor in Boston. And it wasn't personally violent. It was an action of intervention that highlighted the economic injustice, I think, which helped me understand the difference between kind of revolution and insurrection. You know, that I like it when we debate principles and kind of get out front of our history and say what is happening here. And, you know, we're making history now. What side do we want to fall out on? Because it takes so long for the laws to be enacted that by the time we get there, they're almost out of date. And there's more factors come in that have to be figured anyway. And that's how I'm making an analogy to technology, that right now we're on this cascade of change in our culture and in our society. And I feel like we need a break now and then, you know, can we just not change anything else for a little while?
Well, as much as Lynn, as much as I can appreciate that sentiment, I think that for people who benefit from the status quo, they would definitely
absolutely
feel like, let me, you know, let's take a break from change. Let's move back towards tradition. But I think that there are, in this country, there are many people who have been disadvantaged and marginalized, and for them, change can't come soon enough.
Yeah.
And I think that for them, and for, I put myself in this category as a woman, and when I see the destruction of the environment, I am avidly in support of change and progress towards freedom of, towards, you know, towards social justice issues and for environmental protection issues.
Thanks, Gail. Well said.
So, I mean, we're talking about being on the brink of history, if you will. So we're in another brink of history in the Ukraine. What's happening in the Ukraine? What do you think's going to happen? And are we on the brink of a new whole hot colds war with China, Russia? We've only got a couple minutes. So what are your thoughts about the Ukraine and this cusp of history that we're on right now?
I find it amazing that the president of Russia, in being an aggressor, is somehow trying to convince the world that he is the victim of aggression.
Masterful misinformation.
So absolutely. Projection and propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
What do you think about that, Bruce? I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, I mean, you know, Russia has always been worried about an invasion from Europe. You know, I mean, you know, going back, you know, hundreds of years back. So whether it's a legitimate concern or not, yeah, I mean, it's certainly there, and it certainly has motivated Russian foreign policy from the era of the czars to the communist era to the present. And so Putin is just an extension of that. You know, whether he'll actually invade the Ukraine or whether or not this is just posturing, that's a little hard to tell. And I think the next week or two we'll have a better sense of whether he's actually going to move troops in or whether or not he's just creating what he wants, which is a buffer state in the Ukraine against NATO. And Ukraine is saying, no, they're not going to join NATO.
I just got a text from a friend who said the internet is down in the Ukraine, and they think it's begun.
Uh-huh.
Truman.
It's breaking news.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that a commentator was recently saying that they thought Putin had accomplished what he set out to accomplish. And so they felt like he probably would not invade, but who knows? You know, who knows?
I just worry there's so much back and forth with will he or won't he that they're going to run out of any other option and move ahead because they're taunting each other.
I personally suspect that he will. I mean, he has in many ways, this is a point in history where the United States is just not in a very strong position because of our own internal divide, which I think was partly, and obviously from the evidence that we have, was instigated by the Russians and by Putin. So I have every reason to believe he is going to do this. Mm-hmm. And he's done it before. So what, you know, I think that we have evidence that that's definitely in his playbook.
Well, it'll be an interesting few weeks to watch what unfolds on the border of the Ukraines. We're just about out of time, Truman, are we?
Yes, sir, we are. And, you know, I would really, there. You had a number of things on your agenda that we didn't get to that I really would like to see us continue next week,
sure,
if we can. So whoever's hosting next week, keep that in mind.
Definitely.
Good.
Definitely. Great. Yeah.
I believe Gail is our host next week.
I'll be the host next week. Look forward to seeing all of you.
Yeah. So let me go to our outro. So for Gail, Kevin, Lynn, Truman, and I'm Bruce Hallman. This has been the Brown Briefly, and we'll see you next week on another edition of the Brown Briefly.